This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 91 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are you?
Boy, you know, we have so many stories this week, and so many that I just wanted to add to the list, but I'm not even sure we can get through the ones that we have.
It was a newsworthy week, and we've gotten a lot of good listener mail from a lot of people. You know, and we read these stories and they're like, yeah, that's really good. We should talk about it. And it's like, okay, we only have a half hour. We can always make it another 2 hour show, Max.
No, one long show is enough. We'll keep this one at 30 minutes, but we should probably get started to try to fit in as much as we can. What are we looking at this time?
Oh, well, our topics today are UAV law firms are up. DARPA gets a turn. NAVAIR has success with the Triton and the X-47B. We'll talk ag apps, anti-drones, guns, nets, and anti-drone drones. And, of course, we have a weekly FAA report and maybe, just maybe, the last MPRM report.
That's right. The deadline for submissions for comments for the NPRM is April 24th, which, if you're listening to this, is either today or in the past. So we've kind of come to a close on the comment period.
Though we have a rumor out there that it might get extended, so we'll see. Max might be able to get to deliver his report some more weeks. Our first article came from Global Legal Post, which just goes to show you that drones are getting in everywhere. This is a legal journal. And it says, U.S. firms rush to set up drone departments.
Yeah, there is the executive director of the Small UAV Coalition, who's Michael Droback. And it turns out he's also the senior policy advisor at Akin Gump. And he says that, quote, almost every firm has a drone practice. I'm not sure every firm has a drone client, he says. But it is true that we really do see a lot of law firms that are at least starting to get into the drone practice. We've seen them assist companies with getting exemptions from the FAA and that sort of thing. We've also seen, of course, law firms engaged in things like defending drone operators who get tagged with a $10,000 fine from the FAA. And I can only imagine that this is going to be kind of a growing business for the legal profession.
For the legal profession, there's nothing lawyers like better than to write laws. And there's a lot out there that isn't out there. So there's a lot of legal precedents that need to be written, and it's a wide open area. So I could see that this would be, you want to get in early so you can have the biggest effect. But it's lawyers, you know, and we're here to talk about drones. So we'll just move on to, we'll move on to more important things like DARPA. And their TERN program. TERN stands for Tactically Exploited Reconnaissance Node. A TERN is also a bird, but DARPA, of course, is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, the brainchild and the money behind a lot of black projects and new projects, and where the Pentagon gets to play and not necessarily actually ever produce anything. So this is a pretty neat program where DARPA wants the Navy to be able to have 273 aircraft carriers. Now, how did we get 273 aircraft carriers? Because that's currently what the fleet is of the United States Navy. And DARPA wants to explore ways that they can employ drones on every ship in the U.S. Navy, with the possible exception, I guess, of submarines. But even then, you could see them being used also.
Yeah, DARPA is looking at this as a way to deploy drones carrying, I guess, a variety of different kinds of payloads, David, to locations all around the globe on short notice, and also kind of inexpensively, right? They're trying to set up a system that doesn't require lots of modifications to the ship.
Well, the littoral combat vessels, or the LSVs, are a program that the Navy's been working, where it's a modular program, where they have basically these boxes that they swap out depending upon the mission. So if you had, you would have a UAV box that you would swap onto the ship that would have the UAV and the control center as one package. So this modular thinking is the way the Navy's going in the future. And so you would deploy the aircraft, or the UAV, with its box onto the ship with little space, and it's compartmentalization and modularization is really where the Navy wants to go.
Yeah, and the next phase of this program, the TURN program, is to create systems where unmanned aircraft, quote, take off and land from very confined spaces in elevated sea states and transition to efficient long-duration cruise missions. I take it elevated sea states means rough seas, right, David?
Yep. Yeah, the son of the sailor can tell you that elevated sea states are
big
the
waves.
North Atlantic, the North Atlantic in the winter, where they can deploy them all weather, is really what it boils down to. Clearly, drones are, for surveillance, the way to go. And in a way, we're returning back to the 30s and 40s, where destroyers and battleships carried their own spotting aircraft to spot for the forward guns. So what was old is new again. Yeah, so it's just a different platform. So
now also we could we see that DARPA has selected two companies to compete this next phase. And boy, what an interesting couple of companies, given how different they are. And that's Northrop Grumman and AeroVironment. Those are two very different companies in almost every respect. It'll be really kind of fascinating, I think, to see how a company like AeroVironment, relatively small compared to Northrop Grumman, certainly, how they view the mission that they've been given and what kinds of results they come up with as compared to Northrop Grumman.
Bigger doesn't necessarily already isn't always better, but Northrop Grumman is really getting deep into UAVs. So, which brings us to our next naval story, which is the MQ-4C Triton, or BAMS, as we used to call it, which was the Broad Area Maritime Surveillance System, which for people who don't know, the MQ-4C is based on the Air Force Global Hawk. So that's a longer wing, but it's designed for overseas flights and maritime surveillance.
And now they've tested some new kind of search radar that they had the inaugural flight. This is the Multifunction Active Sensor Search Radar, the MFAS Search Radar. And I guess, David, this it's a radar that is useful in all weather conditions, but kind of more significantly, I guess, is that it provides a 360-degree view of a wide area. So this thing covers a lot of territory innately.
The Triton is what they call a HAL, high altitude, long endurance. It's designed to fly for hours on end, upwards of 24 hours, and it can cover a huge area at that high altitude. It's sort of a spy satellite. I mean, it's got the higher you go, the bigger area you can cover. And this surveillance system, the Maritime Surface Surveillance System, can provide continuous coverage for a long period of time. So the other part about it is the surveillance system is also equipped with other things like electro-optical and infrared sensors and full motion video to, once you've detected something, to be able to lock into that and get a bigger definition of it. And eventually, and this is one of the reasons why other countries are looking at this system, like Australia is, the aircraft is equipped to work with the Boeing Poseidon. And the Poseidon is a Boeing 737, but designed to replace the P-3 Orion for anti-surface warfare, what we used to call anti-submarine warfare, but anti-surface warfare. And it will work in pair with the Poseidon to act sort of as a director, and the Poseidon will then lock in on it, and if necessary, carries torpedoes. Nothing like a 737 that has weapons. That's cool, in my opinion. depth charges or torpedoes, and that can attack the target. So it's, again, a multiple package. We're talking about the Navy having multiple systems interacting with each other. This is a little bit broader than what we talked about with TERN, but same concept, that getting multiple uses out of single packages.
And it's also, I guess, an example of getting more value out of multiple platforms. And we keep seeing this over and over again, where a UAV, an unmanned aircraft of some sort, provides some kind of, well, observation or sensors or something that helps direct the actions of some other device, not a UAV. And in this case, it's a manned aircraft. But we see this over and over again. In fact, we've got a story coming up that's another example of that. But before we do that, David, we seem to have a run here of naval-related unmanned stories.
This is the follow-on from last week, which was, we talked about the Northrop Grumman X-47B, which is the unmanned UCAS, unmanned combat air vehicle, which was the first drone to land and take off of an aircraft carrier autonomously. Well, it did something even cooler, in my opinion, which is it took on fuel. Last week, they were able to fly it into the K-707 of a mega tanker, which has a drogue built into the fuselage to refuel the test aircraft at Pax River. Well, on Tuesday of this week, they actually got it to plug in and they transferred fuel from the tanker to the unmanned aircraft. And successfully, with no problems with the disconnect or the connect. And it's autonomous aerial refueling, which is pretty amazing. And it's the final success of the X-47s. But the NAVAIR definitely got their money's worth out of that program.
You found a video on YouTube of the autonomous refueling, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's kind of fun to watch that. But what did they pass? Like, was it 4,000 pounds of fuel?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, which is, this is great. And of course, I can think of all kinds of, you know, good applications for this, civil and, you know, and otherwise, for, you know, extremely long endurance kinds of unmanned aircraft. If autonomous aircraft can be refueled in this way, it kind of opens up a lot of possibilities, not just military ones, I guess.
And we did have a Twitter follower. I tweeted this out to our listeners, and with the wish that now, if they could only figure out how to change the batteries in mid-flight.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an interesting sentiment. So, yeah, unfortunately, us quadcopters will have to still land and change the batteries manually.
All right, well, let's move on to talk about agricultural applications. We see an article in Growing Produce. It's titled, Researchers Seeking Agricultural Applications for Unmanned Aircraft. And this describes how the University of Florida's Citrus Research and Education Center recently hosted an event, the HLB Grower Day and UAV Applications in Agriculture Workshop. And the idea was to look at future applications of UAVs in agriculture. The workshop was conducted by Dr. Reza Ihsani. I think you say his name, hopefully. He's the associate professor of the Agricultural and Biological Engineering School. And he does a lot of research in this. And, you know, just sort of browsing through the Citrus Research and Education Center website and some of these associated websites from the University of Florida, you can really get an understanding to start to of this really the depth of the study that goes on. I mean, when you think of oranges growing in, or other citrus fruits growing in Florida, there's a lot more to just plant a tree, pick the fruit. There's a lot of science going on here. And
spoken like the engineer who designed jet engines.
So it's great to see that that there's this, you know, realization, this understanding that unmanned vehicles really provide a lot of opportunity in this area of agriculture.
And they're being realistic. They said that really it'll be 2017 before the FAA will allow them to do agricultural science with UAVs. But I you never know. They might get an exemption. It's the FAA way. But there was also some other interesting topics that came out of this. For example, we were talking about oranges, right? Well, Spain's Institute for Sustainable Agriculture is conducting research on crops using a quadrotor UAV and taking images to discriminate between crops and weeds. Now, every gardener, every guy that has a front lawn that they'd like to mow would love that kind of technology, to program a lawnmower to take out the weeds and not the crops. University of Central Florida got we're talking about a program where two items become bigger than the two individuals, which is a quadcopter flying above plants, and then if it signals a problem, a ground robot goes out and does a more detailed inspection. Now, why is it a quadcopter when it's flying, but it's on the ground, it's a robot?
Ah, interesting.
I thought that was interesting, you know.
Because in a sense, you know,
because,
they both are.
Because, well, they both are. Now, Max, you and I are diehard fans of that person, Mr. Asimov. And if it's a robot, it has laws it has to follow. Drones don't have to do that.
Hmm. Maybe there's an opportunity there.
We need to make the laws of drones?
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to think about that some.
And last but not least, back home here in PA, right around the corner in the University of Pennsylvania, their GRASP lab, and this I think is really, really cool, is developing a concept where swarms of hummingbird-sized autonomous UAVs fly close to the ground to map the environment. So a little hummingbirds mapping, you know, and they've done 26 rows of citrus trees and counted 479,395 fruits. That's a lot of fruit from only 26 rows of citrus trees. But to think that they had UAVs going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9,
yeah,
10.
Just think of the software that's got to be in this in order to distinguish the fruits on the trees and count the fruits.
And how not, you know, if it's like the rest of us, you know, you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, shoot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, so it's how do you know that you hadn't counted that fruit before? Yeah, I think there's some logic there that is definitely well programming. But I think in honor of the Star Wars theme we had last week, we let's turn to the dark side. The next segment of groups is sort of an interesting collection, which is anti-drone drones and drone nets and drone hunters. And it's an interesting set of stories that suddenly come out, not necessarily for negative reasons, but like the first one here. This was from Engadget.com. France's anti-drone can spot malicious pilots in under a minute. Now, this is a direct response to the sudden flights of drones over downtown Paris, which was causing a bit of a terrorism scare that occurred over several nights, but then seemed to vanish. But evidently, a French firm, ECA Group, has a solution. It's an anti-drone drone.
The idea is apparently that this anti-drone drone chases the rogue drone, something that's made an incursion into an unauthorized area. It then triangulates the location of the drone's pilot, and then it flies in and photographs the pilot and then provides that to police, the location and the photograph. It's kind of an interesting concept.
It's kind of like the video of the week that we had where the guy was flying the quadcopter up with the helicopters, the news report, right? And they followed, they went flying, chasing after the drone in the news helicopter and found the guy on the ground and then proceeded to call the police on him.
Right.
So it's just a drone doing it. So it's interesting technology, you know, for every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
And this ECA group, this isn't some new, fresh startup. This is a company that's been around for years and years and years. They have a lot of expertise in robotics and automated systems, simulation, industrial processes, things like that. They develop technological solutions to perform complex missions in hostile or restrictive environments. Well, ECA won't tell us exactly how this anti-drone drone accomplishes these tasks that we described. But apparently, according to an article in Unmanned Systems Technology, the French government has actually used this system twice, and they were completely satisfied with the results. It says that they located and identified the operators of the, you know, the bad guy drones within a 700-meter radius in under a minute after the drones were detected over a sensitive area. So sounds like it works. ECA Group isn't saying how it works.
But we'll follow up on that. But let's move on to this week. We also had the Boston Marathon. And this was from QZ.com. The low-tech anti-drone technology at the Boston Marathon today. Net guns and text messaging. How do you take a drone out of the sky? Good old-fashioned net gun. It works just like the Romans. You throw the net up and it lands on the person and they get tangled up in it and it takes it down. But I get the impression that Quartz was, they didn't have to use this technology, luckily for the marathon.
The Boston State Police, or rather the Massachusetts State Police, declared a no-fly zone for drones over Boston during the marathon for security purposes, for security reasons. And officials used this drone shield. And we talked about drone shield, I think, David, a long time ago. But this is a system that detects drones by using what they call acoustic detection technology. So these sensors that you can place around actually listen for the characteristic sounds of a drone. This drone shield system has a database of acoustic signatures of some common drones. And the idea is that when it hears something that it believes is a drone, that it provides a notification. So it's an interesting product. I can imagine that I think a lot of people would be interested in drone shield. And I'm thinking of, criminals and drug cartels and other people that might want to know when there's a drone flying
overhead.
The U.S.
Secret Service?
Yeah, the White House, the Capitol building could certainly use one of these products, I think.
Yeah, but a gyrocopter is not a drone.
That's right. But
I don't think they have the acoustics for a gyrocopter.
But, it should be extensible to that, right? I mean, it's just a different sound signature. So we'll put a link to, not only the article, but also the Drone Shield site in the show notes. So you can check that out if you want to learn more about Drone Shield.
So, and okay, now, folks, you know that we can't go a week without talking about our favorite people on the planet, the FAA. And this was from avweb.com, sent via our listener, Peter. And on April 8th, 2015, I know we're reporting this late, but the FAA sent a policy notice to the aviation safety inspectors on the subject of aviation-related videos or other electronic media on the internet. So we know that a FAA agent in New England proceeded to tell somebody that the fact that they had posted their video on YouTube and the YouTube was selling advertising, that drone video was considered a commercial enterprise. Well, evidently the FAA has thought twice about that, which is good because it did seem a little absurd, huh?
Yeah, it did. It did. And so this is the FAA, the home office, as it were, taking a look at this and providing the guidance to all the field offices and the other aviation safety inspectors that are involved in this. And this notice says, quote, electronic media posted on a video website does not automatically constitute a commercial operation or commercial purpose or other non-hobby or non-recreational use. And it's interesting in its guidance. It says that inspectors are expected to use critical thinking when addressing electronic media.
Ooh, what a concept for a government agency.
I know. It's kind of vague, but it makes sense. They're just saying, you know, use your head. Let's not get carried away here.
David's number one important thing for flying a UAV, common sense.
There it is. Well, the FAA agrees with you now. They're also looking to use policy of education to encourage voluntary compliance, they say. Now, this notice, it provides the protocol for inspectors when they receive complaints or notifications of video posted to the internet that may contain what someone considers to be non-compliant UAS operations. So they give some guidance. It's basically pretty simple. The notice says that, you may need to contact and counsel the operator. That means have a conversation and explain how things should work, what's allowable and what's not. There's also a UAS informational letter template that's provided, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes. That's for inspectors to use when a written notification to the drone operator is needed. And the letter's kind of interesting. It provides the authority, or it describes the authority that the FAA has in this matter. It defines an aircraft, and that includes a UAS. It provides a distinction between hobby or recreational use from other use, i.e. commercial. It also defines model aircraft operations that are, excluded from this unless they're operated unsafely. And it also states the requirements for non-model aircraft operations. It talks about the COA process, airworthiness, the exemption process, so forth. So they're really trying for, I guess they're calling it an educational outreach sort of approach to this, which is, I think that kind of makes a lot of sense. The guidance contained in this notice and in the informational letter template it kind of describes how the FAA is viewing this. And I think that's a much better approach than just saying, hey, it's on YouTube, it's commercial use.
Okay, chalk one up for the FAA. A harumph for common sense prevailing on this one. So, but we got some great news from our sponsor, Bob Schmidt of UAV Propulsion Tech. Come, Max.
Yeah, he sent a press release. This is Vols launches new DA-26D redundant servo for demanding UAV applications. And what this is about is a German company, Vols Servo, and they've released this new actuator. And this is for high reliability applications. Interestingly, the actuator, the electric motors, the control and communications electronics, the power supply, they're all redundant. There's a huge amount of redundancy built into this thing in an effort to make this highly reliable. And I think this is important in general, because if you think about growth in commercial drone operations, more and more package delivery, many inspections, agriculture, all these things, you're talking about expensive hardware, a lot of expensive sensors, and you need to be able to rely on the device, the UAV, that it's not going to encounter problems, either because you stand to lose your investment in all the hardware, or you create an unsafe condition, either to people on the ground or other aircraft in the air, and so forth. So just as a general concept, I think that this is really important that we need to move a little more in this direction of reliability. I know the quadcopters that you can buy for $1,000 are generally pretty reliable, but when we talk about commercial applications more and more, I think pretty reliable is not quite good enough, David. I think they need to be it's just highly reliable.
Redundancy is everybody's hero. From NASA on down, and especially in aviation, it's always been redundancy, 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 triple redundancy. So I'm glad to see that they're following up on this. So good to Bob, and a shout out that, of course, we do appreciate his sponsorship, and we do appreciate UAV Propulsion Tech. So definitely, folks, do us a favor and check out his press release. And you know, check out redundancy and start thinking about that way, because it's really the way that we need to do for commercial applications. So speaking of redundancy, let's talk about our video of the week.
Yeah, this came from our friend Bill. This is a video that was originally on a television program here in the States, Inside Edition. And the title of this is, "Watch this homeowner shoot down a drone flying over his property." And that's exactly what he does, or at least that's what's in this video, right? This quadcopter shows up over his fairly rural-looking property. The guy comes out of his house with what looks like a shotgun, I guess. Takes a few shots, misses. If you look in the background, there's a guy up on a far hill, probably the operator of this thing. And the homeowner finally ends up getting a shot, the mark, and down drops the quadcopter.
There's a couple problems with this video. It's like every other real TV video. You get to watch the guy go into the house and grab his gun. And if you're going to videotape that, how do you know that he's going in the house and get his gun? Bill had some questions that he wanted answered about the video. So is it unauthorized commercial use? And would the FAA still go after that now that they have a new policy about videos, which we just talked about? Mm. Or is it the fact that we've had this talk when we talked about our towns that were going to issue drone licenses? The FAA quickly said a UAS is an aircraft and you can't be taking pot shots at aircraft. That's a federal offense. So, okay. Or do we get them for police for reckless discharge of a firearm? He was not licensed hunting, and he was certainly not defending himself against grave bodily injury. Yeah. He came out of the house to shoot. All three are really good questions from Bill, and it's fun to discuss, but there's something serious about this. It's like, we don't want people to encourage people to go out and take pot shots at drones. I mean, here in Philadelphia, every New Year's Eve, somebody gets hurt because there are people discharging guns at midnight into the air. And what comes up, folks, gravity says must come back down. Shooting at a UAV, if you're shooting at it and you miss, where does that bullet go? You know, this is safety at first. And while this is a bit of an entertaining video, it's also a lesson in what not to do.
Yeah,
what do you think, Max?
Yeah, it's great theater, and that's what it might be, actually. This homeowner has a Kickstarter or one of those kinds of programs running for some business he's trying to generate or something like that. And in the Kickstarter material is some of this footage from this event. And so the question is this just all publicity for his Kickstarter program? I mean, if that's the motivation behind this, I guess the guy's brilliant, and it looks like it probably worked because of all the attention this is bringing to, you know, this little project that this homeowner has, unrelated to this drone incident. So you just never really know in some of these situations whether this is, you know, fictional, created for a purpose, or if this is actual a real event.
So I guess as we release this, the NPRM, our longing that we've worked so hard on for the last 2 years might have come to an end. How many comments were attached to the NPRM?
Yeah, with one day remaining, 3,840 comments. I don't know if there's going to be a last minute push to get comments in, or maybe most of the people who had intended to comment had already gotten theirs in, but we ended up with just shy of 4,000 comments to the FAA. So,
which is pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's a lot of input. That's a lot of input.
And you know what? We'll hope for 50% of them are valid, and that's still 2,000 quality comments. So,
yep,
we're good. So, quickly, we've got some quick feedback. This is from our listener, Christian, in Germany. I'm a frequent listener of your podcast. Unfortunately, I can only manage to hear it on occasional train or car rides. Christian, you need to start riding more trains and more car rides. But he basically said he likes our subject, and he's studying at Embry-Riddle online, which is kind of cool. I didn't realize Embry-Riddle had an online program.
Yeah, he's in the Master of Aeronautical Science, specializing in unmanned systems.
Hmm.
Cool.
You know, maybe I need to get a master's degree in unmanned systems.
Yeah.
And he was going to offer us a detailed information of the RPAS situation in Europe and the counter UAV prevention detection. You know, we have that theme going on tonight. And we're going to reach out to Christian and get some more of that information, because we try to cover Europe and Asia and Australia, but we really, for those outside of the United States, send us the stories that are important to you. We try to keep a broad view of this as a global market, but it's easier for us for the U.S. stories, folks. But definitely, like with our airplane geeks, we love hearing from around the world, and we want to keep growing, but we want to be able to give you stories that are important to you.
All right. Well, David, I think we better bring this episode to a close. We want to thank all of you listening. You're the reason we do this. You've been listening to episode 91 of the UAV Digest. You can find us on our website, theuavdigest.com. You can also go directly to the show notes for this episode by visiting theuavdigest.com/91 for episode 91.
And before we go a little bit further, I have to let everybody know, if you don't listen to Airplane Geeks, I had taken a sabbatical from them because I'm going to have surgery. Unfortunately, it's very invasive, and it's been a struggle doing this episode, but a labor of love for the last month or so, where I've been just doing this show. So Max next week might be by himself, but we have some stuff planned, but it might be as much as 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, where I'll be back. But I will be in touch. I'm going to be a bit upset come next Thursday when I can't record this, but I want everybody to know that I'll be back. I promise.
You better, David.
And well, you can't do this without me.
No.
And besides, and I want to say thank you to Max. He's been very accommodating to me over the last couple of months as I've been struggling with this battle. And I want to thank you guys, because if it wasn't for the listeners, and we've got a growing follow and our Twitter following and our Facebook following, it's given me quite a push to keep going on. So I want to thank you. But since we mentioned Twitter, you can find us on at the UAV Digest, Facebook.com/UAV Digest, feedback, which is feedback@theuavdigest.com. If you want to reach Max, you can reach him at max@theuavdigest.com. And of course, if you want to reach me, it's david@theuavdigest.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave them feedback so we can keep being one of the top podcasts for UAVs there. We really need that to keep our momentum going and to be able to bring you the stories and continue to cover the things that we do. If you'd like to buy some swag, you can get a t-shirt or a pocketbook or a briefcase or whatever at our Cafe Press store. And of course, if you'd like to sponsor the show and help our little system run a little smoother and pay for things like servers, you can do it through our Patreon account. And both our Cafe Press account and our Patreon website can be done off of our links off of our webpage, which is theuavdigest.com. So I guess that about covers it. Again, I'd like to thank all of our listeners for all of the feedback and wonderful stories. And thanks, Max. And I guess I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. And with that, it's David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.